Come on, people! It's time to live it up!
Welcome to the director's chair. I'm your host, Rosemary Rodriguez, director of film and television, and very excited to have with us at We Play Radio a very special guest, Mick Bettencourt, writer of shows like Wicked City, Chicago PD, Chicago Fire, Breakout Kings, Detroit 187. I love that show.
Thank you.
And Law and Order SVU. In addition to all that, Mick is a stand-up comedian and podcaster extraordinaire of the Mick Bettencourt Show.
Every Monday.
How are you? Welcome.
Good. Thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, my God. It's so much fun to have you here. You always give me a lot of energy. As soon as I see you, I'm like, oh, my God, that's who I want to be.
Wow.
Yeah, you're the guy I want to be. Oh, my God. Because you're just so prolific.
Wow, thank you.
You're an artist.
That's very cool to hear. Yeah, that's what I'm striving for.
I know. And you're very, your intention is always pure. And right now you're on a new show called Shots Fired.
Shots Fired, coming out on Fox. Probably there's no release date for it yet, but I think maybe September. Yeah, I'll definitely let you know for sure. But yeah, super. It's been amazing so far. I'm only 3 weeks in. Outline went in today. I'll get notes on that tomorrow into the studio
lucky
network.
We got you.
And yeah, but you know, we grind, we hustle. That's what we do. So like we make time.
We hustle hard.
I texted you yesterday because I'm like, I don't think I worked till 11 last night.
Yeah.
When I sent you the text, 11:30 actually. So I'm like, oh, I can't make it. I'm so sorry if I work that late tomorrow night. And you're like, Wednesday.
Wrong night. We're working hard. Keep track of the days. But don't you find that now? Like people just, they get the times wrong. They get the dates wrong. I mean, me too. It's all like happening so fast.
One of the guys that just checked in on Periscope, Kevin Robinson, great podcast. Kevin hates hip hop. I've been trying to get him on the show. And I'm like, he had to reschedule. His schedule got busy. Mine got busy, so it's crazy. Like, you keep
it's
going.
Hard.
Yeah.
Or people read, like, half emails.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They don't get through the
whole thing.
The
whole thing, yeah.
You got to keep everything real short and moving. Got to
keep
sentences. It moving. I know. Three sentences or less. Okay, so one of the things that I do love about you is your hustle, right? And you really do hustle. And how do you have time to do everything you have to do, plus be a husband, plus you have children, beautiful wife, for real.
Thank you. Yeah.
So how do you have time to do all of the things that you're doing?
Well, shout out to Katie, Megan, and Liam for the people that you just mentioned. You know, I think that it's a tricky question because I think the real question is, how do you not get overwhelmed from doing whatever it is you're doing?
Yeah.
You know, like that's the trick. I think you could be working a part-time job and be completely overwhelmed.
That's interesting. That's true.
Yeah. So I think it's the real key before you even look at any of that stuff is how do I not get overwhelmed? Mm-hmm. And that's more of just an emotional stability thing, which isn't a given for me. It's just not.
Well, it's also, I mean, I remember seeing, I'm spacing on his name. The Google guy, Eric.
Bryn. No. Oh, Schmidt. Schmidt.
Eric Schmidt.
Yeah.
And he was being interviewed and somebody asked him like, what's the most important thing about technology today? This is a couple of years ago. And he said, know where the power button is. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. Because that's what I find. Like, if we try to make a rule at home, like, okay, after 8 o'clock, you got to chill with that. Or you got to take out a window. We're going to sit at dinner.
Yeah.
You got to chill with that.
Yeah, we just talk
for like
now.
A window of time.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I told you before we walked in here that like, I just said that in my own house of like, you know, every night and like 7 o'clock, shut it down. Just shut it down. It allows your brain to rest. Like, look, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a psychologist. I've read some tests online. Like all of this stuff hyperstimulates your brain. It's not even stimulating. It's hyperstimulating. So just logically, you're gonna have a come down. And not only that, you're gonna feel dissatisfied and bored when your brain's not hyperstimulated.
What does that mean? Stimulated versus hyperstimulated?
Well, some of the tests that I read are like, you know, some of the social media apps, you know, even to AOLs, like you've got mail. It's like, oh, I've won something. Like to a deep, that's like true. Conscious level, like somebody's thinking about you. Did I win? Is it good? Is it bad? Emotions are immediately being stirred. There's casino technology that social media companies are using of how the numbers pop up. Like I've won something, or people are engaged and you're searching for more likes or shares or retweets or whatever it is.
Right.
So like all of a sudden, it's not just a stimulating thing. You're being engaged on many more levels. That billions of dollars are being spent. And I'm not like, don't want to sound like a guy that's going to wrap his head in tinfoil and say the Illuminati are coming after you. But like, you know, there's money being spent for you to engage in this technology. And you're competing with thousands of employees who work 60 to 80 hours a week to make sure you stay on that technology. So like, you just got to be aware that that's the deal. And as you know, for like 6 months, I went back to a flip phone. To just completely deprogram and chill for a minute. And I was doing some stand-up dates, so I didn't want to lug a camera around with me.
Right.
And, you know, this podcast that I do, I have created some, like, they're really like family. You know, I mean, they showed up. Mm-hmm. This guy, Brack, picked us up at the airport. We hung out at breakfast. This kid, Andy Gert, came and took pictures and worked the merch table with us after the show, and we got to hang out with him. Like, it's people email me from all over the world. So it's not like, oh, you're a fan of mine. Like, I don't even like using that word. You know what I mean?
You've created a community of
people.
Yeah,
exactly.
And like, you can tell it's like your family.
Yeah. So like, you know, what are we doing? Oh, am I out of the camera?
Keep going.
All right. I forgot why I told you that.
Well, because, you know, one of the reasons I started the director's chair is to talk about collaboration. So as we know in our industry, there's a lot of egos. There's a lot of people think that, you know, something succeeds because of them.
Yeah.
A singular person, right? And so as we know, it actually takes a village to create a good show, a great episode, a great series, a great movie. Mm-hmm. It takes a lot of people.
Absolutely.
And so I think one of your skills, and I think mine as well as a director, is like to go on set, you know, to show up in pre-production, whatever it is, and create that family so that people are open to like connecting. Because at mm-hmm. the end of the day, you create things just to connect with people.
I agree. Well, yeah, I would.
So sometimes I feel like, you know, the technology is something that can sometimes get in the way of that, if that makes sense.
Well, I think
it can feed it too. Yeah. Like it supports it. It's very tricky. It's like it can go either way.
If it wasn't for that, I guess that was my point. Then I was like, why did I bring that up? I wasn't as connected to those people as I wanted to be. And I had to just kind of decompress. Mm-hmm. And I knew that I would get shit from them if I wasn't, because that's how I stay connected to them. Email's not really, I mean, I have gotten emails from the folks, but like, it's really Twitter.
Right.
And Instagram a little bit, but mostly Twitter. Mm-hmm. That's just how I talk to everybody. So mm-hmm. I was down from that for a while and I missed the connection from those people. And that, like.
And I'm sure they missed you too.
Yeah. I mean, the collaboration, like when I'm on stage doing a show, I'm a storyteller. Like I'm a comedian, but at the core, I'm a storyteller. Like that's how I approach the craft of stand-up comedy. So like there's a beginning, a middle, and an end. And I want a connection with the audience and make an experience for them.
Right.
You know, as opposed to I'm jamming jokes down your face. The collaboration, I take that word very seriously because I'm collaborating with the audience. I'm the show.
Right.
But one, a show doesn't work if there's no audience. It doesn't mean anything. And then it's just self-aggrandizing bullshit.
Right.
But like I am committed to, some people flew in from different states. That you got to get babysitters. You have a life. You're leaving to come spend time with me.
Yeah.
It's my job to make it worth your while.
Yeah, and everyone's life is hard. So at some point, there's also an element of like wanting to be of service and sort of want to help people and boost them up.
Yeah.
Give them something to look forward to, right?
Absolutely.
So when you went off the grid, I mean, that's one of the things I love about you. So you're ballsy. You go off the grid for a while, right? You get a flip phone, like a StarTech, whatever you had, right? You go off the grid. And so how did that affect you? You said you missed your fans, but what else did it feed in your spirit? Or what did you miss?
Well, for the first 2 days, my brain, that's kind of why I use the word hyperstimulated. Like my brain, I picked that phone up, even though it couldn't do any of the things that my brain thought it could. And just the ritual of constantly checking a smartphone for the first 2 days, I had to pick the phone up 50 times a day and look at it, flip it open, realize, oh, it doesn't do that. And then put it back down.
So just force of habit.
Just force of habit and my brain wanting the escape. So my ability to remain, to, to keep sustained concentration return. Whereas even now I notice the negative impacts. Really the only impact is a connection. It's nice that I can take pictures, that's fun, or video, but like there are other devices that could do that. So I've kind of sold my privacy and literally allowing myself to be mentally deteriorated just for convenience purposes. It's a pretty poor trade.
It is. But I mean, I found that, you know, I've only recently last maybe 6 months, actually since Jessica Jones, since like November, I'm like, all right, I'm going to get on Twitter and I'm going to see what this thing is about.
Yeah.
And what I didn't realize is that it's actually fun. Super fun to have people, because again, because we work in this egotistical, egomaniac industry, people sometimes don't say thank you. They forget to acknowledge, hey, this is a great script that you wrote.
Yeah.
Wow, that episode came out because that line that you wrote there, that dialogue there was kick ass. Sometimes they forget. They might think it, but they're just on to the next or whatever, right? Especially in TV because it's such a fast moving train.
Yeah.
You know, so then what I realized is that, okay, Jessica Jones is on. It's all going to be streaming.
Yeah.
So it starts streaming on Thursday. I did episode 10. So I'm like, I get my, you know, my girl, Kathleen Sheehan, try to help me out, right? We meet on Sunday because I figure episode 10, they started Thursday. By episode 10, on Sunday, they're probably at episode 10, right? So we get on. I'm trying to plan the whole thing, right?
Yeah.
The right timing and, you know. So we get on.
You were off by about 4 days.
No, I wasn't. It was good because even the critics didn't quite get to the 10th hour until Sunday.
Yeah, okay.
Well, so, you know, from Thursday to whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was so much fun to have people say like, hey, that angle or that shot or like saying things that I don't even think people pay attention to because I had done a Good Wife. I had gone on Twitter a couple months earlier and like just tried to tweet during the Good Wife episode. And I was horrified. I was like, oh my God, I want them to watch the show. And they're like tweeting.
Yeah.
They're not watching. I was like, you know, as a director, I'm like, oh, this is a work of art. How are they missing
magic?
So what I realized even while that was going on, I'm like, okay, I'm going to take a picture of this shot and I'm going to talk about that shot.
Oh, that's
why
cool.
I did that shot.
Mm-hmm.
And then I found, oh, but this is okay because then they actually want to know stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I think it's like, I don't know. It can be an extension of like the reason why we do things is for other people. I do. I'm not one of those directors. You're clearly not this kind of person. It's like, I'm just doing it for me.
No.
It's bullshit.
No. Well, it's and eventually you're trying to fill a black hole if that's your motive. It's just it's an unsustainable way to be creative because you're never satisfied and nothing is ever good enough. And then the throw from that is so negative because the motives are selfish to begin with.
Right.
And so how that, and look, there's an exception to every rule. Like I was just talking the other day about people that have the asshole pass, you know, like someone's just a raging fucking lunatic and they're like, oh, that's Frank.
Right.
And I'm like, well, fuck Frank. Fuck Frank and his bullshit. You know what I mean? Like, why the fuck does Frank get to treat people that way? And they're
I'll
like, oh, it's just Frank. And I'm like, the fuck? Who gives a shit?
I will do that. I'll do that with actors. If they're assholes, I'm like, it's okay because they really fucking deliver. And if they really fucking pass. Deliver, I give them the asshole pass. I'm going to call it that from now on. I am. I'm going to call it that. Because it's true. They deliver. Now, if they have that and they don't deliver, I got no time for them. And I got no love. Right?
One of the things that I struggle with is not being able to look past the asshole. It's just, it's really difficult for me. Like I will really, that's the shit that I will take personally. Because to me, when someone's an asshole, what they really are is a bully.
Right.
And I have a really big fucking problem with bullies.
Right.
Like a really big problem with them. And especially in a town where like you, the egos bother you. What bothers me is this sense of fake toughness. Because I understand what brutality looks like. And you know, like there was murder in my family. You know, just like really gnarly shit.
Yeah, tell us a little bit.
And you know, when guys want to come off like the street or they're fucking hard or, you know, because they live in this fantasy land where the asshole pass exists, that bothers me because it minimizes what that really is. And then it perpetuates this weird myth, like you're a tough guy, but then I can't check you. Because you're like, whoa, what the fuck? What are you doing? I just get to be a dick. And that's how it works. It's the unwritten rule. I get to be loud and scream and act tough, but you can't clearly say anything because you burst my little fantasy bubble.
Right.
And then I look like that. That's the weird thing about being out here. Then I'm the asshole because I called you out.
Well,
as opposed to where, like, I remember I got jumped one time when I was 14 and I didn't really deserve it. This girl said I grabbed her ass. Her brother and three of his friends, like a Delta 98, pulled up. They popped the doors. All four got out. I was going to run. I couldn't get away. I was with a guy. And, you know, I got it really bad. And I wound up crawling under a car and hugging the wheel because I thought they were going to curb me, you know, put my mouth on the curb.
Oh, shit.
You know, I was just getting it bad.
Did you grab her ass?
No, I didn't grab her ass.
Why did she do that?
Well, she wanted to hook up and I said no. And, you know, it was real petty shit. But the brother didn't give a fuck, you know. And so... but I was also talking shit.
Right.
So like I was way out of my fucking lane. And so the lesson that I took away was, you know, obviously I have to stay on guard a little bit more, like, you know, cause that's just where I,
and if you're going to get beat up,
part of the world
of
where I come from, you know, so I should have been on point. Next time I don't second guess where I'm going to run. I have four bigger dudes get out. You run, you know, you need to fight another day.
Right.
So,
and also if you're going to get accused of something, you might as well do it next time.
Yeah. But even then you don't have to I'm not waiting around.
No.
If four dudes get out of a car, we're not talking. I'm running because I know they're not getting out of the car to talk.
How old were you?
I was 14.
That's fucked up.
Yeah. So I learned you don't run your mouth. And I did kind of get the beating from running my mouth because they were saying, oh, you want to run your fucking mouth? So I'm like, that's right. I did run my mouth. So I'll own that part.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't grab your sister's ass, but I did run my mouth. So when I was when I caught the beating, I was like, I deserve part of this beating. I don't deserve getting curbed, but I do deserve part of this beating. And so then, you know, you get a little older and you're like, oh, you're running your mouth. Do I get to check you? Oh, I don't get to check you. Well, then now we're not playing a fair game.
Right.
And that not playing fair is part of the rules out here.
Right.
So it's like, those are the weird things that you have to learn where you're like, I got to slip this jab and then I'm going to win the fight, but I'm going to just slip some of these punches so that I can wait until the appropriate time. So I keep my job. I keep my pension. I keep my health care.
It's called navigating politics.
Yeah, navigating politics. I have another job. But that bully shit, that's the one. That is really the one. I can really tolerate anything else. I just can't tolerate bullying or just like blatant, really unfair shit.
See, for me, it's like, it's interesting. It's the passive aggressive. It's not like the loud people. It's the people that come off. This is what kicks up my shit. The people that come off, like they're all like, you know, one of my first jobs out here, I did a great job. And then it was towards the end of the season. Next season came. I got another one. And I thought I was going to end up getting another episode. And both episodes came out great. And everyone was super cool with me. Like, I had a great time. And then producers, actors, everything was great. And then I found next season came, and then they didn't bring me back. And it was my first time. I'm like, what the hell? Like, I had no clue why.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I'm like, what the hell? What happened? Was really upset. This is back when I needed a job. Like, I needed that job. I needed that paycheck. I needed the insurance. I needed that job. I was devastated. I remember calling my friend in New York. He has nothing to do with this business. And I was crying. I was really fucked up over this shit. And I was like, I can't believe this. Da-da-da. They're really nice, really nice to me. And he goes, wait. Isn't that what they do in your business? I've kind of heard that don't they backstab you in that business? Isn't that the business you're in? And I was like, yeah, but what did I do? I didn't do anything. He goes, yeah, but you're in the game. That's how the game is played.
That's the game.
And you're in the game. Yeah. He said that. I swear to God, my whole fucking shoulders went up. And I was like, that's right. I'm in the game. I just got fucked and I can handle it.
Yeah.
That's fine. I'm in the game. I can be there. And that's kind of like always my attitude.
You don't like getting hit? Get out of the ring.
Fly. But people have trouble sometimes collaborating.
Yeah.
When you have like an East Coast thing, or you're just sort of direct with people. Direct and honest. Does that ever get you in trouble?
No.
No, you don't have to name any names.
Yeah, I don't want to synchronize my gig so you can even, only because, you know, I'm.
Well, you lost words. See, that's how political this is.
No, it's not. Yeah, you know what it is? It's like, I know that this person was struggling. You know, they were a little, I knew that they were overwhelmed and they were taking it out on some people, this particular person. And I was probably, it's the only time to a boss's face that I think I lost my cool in 12 years. So, you know, I'm proud of that record.
That's pretty good.
And the point where, and I felt like, because I can't kind of do anything. So I don't lose my temper because I can't kind of lose my temper. You know, I can't kind of drink.
So you just
I can't
kind of.
I don't go there.
Right.
So it's not a place like I can't get into. I can't raise my voice.
Right.
I can't because that's all old behavior for me. That's all shit that I left in Chicago when I came out here.
Right.
Like if we're going to, like I can't get in a screaming match. I can't kind of hit somebody. Like it's, I can't, it has to be total abstinence, yeah. You know? So
I understand.
I did feel like with this person who was just like bottoming out and totally overwhelmed, mm-hmm. but like the throw of that was on some really talented people who were just like unnecessarily going down because of this person. You
meaning
know.
Going down, possibly getting fired.
Yeah, but going down.
Just beat down.
Well, everyone was losing their job because we knew the show was getting canceled.
Oh, got it.
But like, you know, just the attitude and the approach and the way that the business was being done, which again, you know what, just to be totally honest, is really none of my business.
Right, right.
You know, so I took it personally. That right. was my fault. I'll own it. And then this person came at me personally, which is their choice, not mine. And so then I crossed my own line and took it personally. Whereas before I could have just seen this person for what it was, someone who was struggling, who was in yeah. way over their head
yeah.
and then coming at me. And then I have to take the high road and go, this person's way out of their league. They're not, I'm not going to take this personally, take the shot. You know, like I just said, like slip the jab,
yeah.
go home, play yeah. with the kids, you know, leave everything on a positive note. And, you know, that's not what happened. You know, I just said, you know, we can't do that.
Right.
You know, that's just, I drew a little line in the sand. I'm like, well, you're saying we just can't fucking do that, man. It's like, right. not.
And that's how you said it.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know, what's weird is you're from back east. Like I was inside, I was hot. My hands got hot and I knew like my voice was didn't raise, but I didn't know this, but the dude backed out of the room. So like I checked with everybody. I go, I wasn't even saying anything, right?
Right.
But like, they were like, yeah, but something was going on. We didn't really know what it was, but he, you know, they're like, you didn't yell, you didn't.
Right.
But they're like, yeah, he didn't back out of the room. I don't want to make this more dramatic than it is. But he like took two steps back.
Yeah.
So clearly something in my demeanor, and I'm not saying that to sound cool or tough at all.
Or clearly he knew that he fucked up.
Maybe.
And so
but
he's
again,
backing
like,
up out of like.
This is like you said, it's not about taking this personally. Mm-hmm. This is about collaborating. Mm-hmm. And then in that moment, I have to own my shit. I was a bad collaborator.
Right.
Because I could be better.
Me too. I feel, you know, I try to pride myself on collaboration and I will, there's a very fine line, right? Because sometimes it's like, all right, I want to take in and I want to try to, you know, make it work. But then sometimes you feel like your toes are getting stepped on and you're like, wait a second. Why is your voice more important than mine? Like it's navigating, well, you want to be heard. I want to be heard. Let's hear each other. Sometimes things, again, move so fast.
Yeah.
You don't have time for all that. We're all under pressure. You got outlines. You got, you know, scripts due. I got to make my day. You know, we work. I don't know if everyone listening knows, but, you know, we work minimum 12-hour day.
Minimum,
the
yeah.
The goal is always 12 hours
yeah.
for me. Because
you're a hero if you get people out in 12.
Well, I hit a wall, dude. I don't yeah. even have to ask first AD what time it is.
Yeah.
I just feel it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I can see everybody feels it.
Yeah.
And everyone's work diminishes after 12 hours. It's just life. We can only go so much.
Yeah, I agree with you.
But, you know.
And let's just take a moment to sing the praises of the real heroes of the television and film business, the crew.
Oh, my God.
That are... Warriors. And I'm going to take, don't be a dick and fucking Twitter me and go, SEAL Team 6 or Warriors. I get it. I understand. Believe me. I get it. But they're incredibly hardworking. And when all the above the line disappears and there's yeah. another hour and a half of work left to break down the set and everything. And
yeah.
it's, you know, Friday started at 3 and no one's getting home till 9 a.m. Saturday morning.
That's correct.
Like, it's real deal stuff, and they do it because they love it.
Well, and also, let's just say that they do it usually from, say, right after July 4th, and they'll keep going, and they go till, like, April. They have 2 weeks off in December, only 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And they work all those months, and they generally work, I mean, You know, 12-hour shooting day is like 14 hours of travel, plus that 16 hours for people that got to load the trucks and do all that.
16-hour days.
Every single day for that many months.
Yep.
Those are the heroes. Those are the those are my people.
Yeah.
And those are the people, you know, many jobs I go on. I'm going to tell you, talk about collaboration. I was just brought up a certain way. If somebody does something, you say thank you.
Yeah.
I cannot tell you, and I've been doing this for many, many years, I cannot tell you that I still hear people say, wow, nobody ever says thank you. Still. And some of these people have been doing this for years also. How hard is it for somebody to say thank you?
It's all an ego thing.
For doing a good job.
Yeah.
Or just to acknowledge, you know, the dolly grip. That was a smooth move. That was amazing.
Yeah.
I make it a point to do that because I'm just a worker too.
Yeah, yeah.
But I can't, they make me look good. Every single person there makes me look good.
I only work just to bring real magic to the crew experience in Speedos and Ugg boots. Sometimes in my scarf.
Oh, no. Oh, my God. That's hilarious. After you've eaten like five stacks of pancakes,
yeah, that's right?
So you're like really feeling it. That's awesome. They love you for it too, right? They love it. So what is the best collaboration you've ever had with somebody? And again, you don't have to say who, but you can, whatever. Just what's a really great experience?
Creatively?
Yeah.
The first two that come right off the top, a great question. The first two that come right off of my head are with Vincent No, who really, his last name's NGO, really gave me my break in this business. Really was the first person that... gave me a shot, and I was an actor in a pilot that he co-created.
And what was that?
Fearless. I think it aired like two episodes on CBS. I played one of the bad guys in it, and probably not very well. And I was just such a young, green actor and like terrified, you know, all those times you wish you could go back. And, but so they gave me a shot on the acting front. And then not only that, when we were talking, we kind of, you know, copped a vibe and like really, I liked his sensibilities and he liked mine. And 6 months later, I took him out to lunch. I was really struggling financially. We were on our way home. My son was born. I had no money. Mm. And then I was just looking at every opportunity that I could create, you know, any way I could create an opportunity to buy my groceries, being creative. And so I said, hey, Vince, I got this idea for a show, a drama. And you know, I was known mostly as a comedian. I had just started booking work as an actor, as a dramatic actor. And so we wound up, you know, he shepherded the, he goes, okay, I like that. We went and we pitched it to his production company that he had to deal with and the studio he had to deal with. And we went and pitched it to CBS and they bought it in the room.
That's fantastic.
And so we were going to co-create this thing and I had never written it. I said, you have some scripts you could send me to like, see how the structure works and everything. And you know, he really, he just had the patience and he's like, you know, you're coming into the scene really early. He goes, you know, look, just, I think it'd just be better if we came in here. But this is the way that he said it. He's like, come in way later, man. Come in late, get out early. You know, he was like my film school.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I learned on the fly when someone paid me, you know, pretty good grip of dough to learn this with a guy who was really like respected in the business. And so... That was a great collaboration. I've had great collaborations, you know, like on Law and Order SVU, Amanda Green mentoring me as a co-EP, and then Neil Baer, you know, like just showing me really clean storytelling with a social or ethical undercurrent. And that was great. As far as like real collaborations go, you know, working with Amanda and developing stories with her. And then now the show that I'm on, Shots Fired, you know, our room is like phenomenal. And everyone is so smart and like passionate. And like, you know, to be honest, like my heart, you know, I'm gonna sound corny, but you know, like my heart got broken a couple times in the last couple of years, mm-hmm. just on the TV writing side, you know? And, you know what? I want to give a shout out to Stephen Christie at Boom Comics. I had a creative experience with him and Chloe Dan and Mark Ambrose and James O developing a comic book for them. That was phenomenal.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, that was great. Great notes. Super smart. But this room now is, you know, I woke up at 3:40. I woke up some shit happened out in front of my house last night at 3:45 a.m. I went in the bathroom, I brushed my teeth, and I'm like, I got to work on the show.
Oh, that's exciting.
I got this little piece of dialogue, and like, I couldn't wait to tell it to the show runner because I know how excited they are. It's a husband and wife team. Like, they want all of their writers to succeed.
Who is it?
It's Reggie and Gina Blythewood. They co-created the show, and they're running the show, and they're going to direct episodes of the show. And they just inspired. They're inspired, and they're passionate, and they want everyone to succeed, and they want everyone to collaborate, and they want everyone talking and being engaged. They want everyone to think visually. Like, it just, it's like, amazing.
It wakens you up, your whole soul.
You're like, you're just alive. And you're like, let's do this. Like,
and that's great.
Yeah.
Because it makes you want to step up. It's like any job.
You want to really step. Well, that's what he said yesterday. He goes, I want everyone to be better writers because I want everyone to push themselves and be better writers because of the show.
Right.
Phenomenal bar to set.
You want to bring out the best in people.
Absolutely.
I mean, I think that's everyone's job, no matter what industry you're in. When you get overbearing or when you're controlling or you try to tell people what to do because you know best.
Yeah.
You know, I go into a scene. I have a specific thing in my head. I've planned it. I've done my homework. I've watched every episode. I've read the script. Like, I've done what I need to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then I get my script and I've worked on that and I do all my work. But I don't show up wearing that on my sleeve. Like, I remember going onto a series and I was doing an early episode. I went through a period where I loved doing new shows. And, you know, then I realized that that's like a political nightmare. So it's tricky, right?
But it's really so, dominated by fear because everyone's,
It's a little animal. It doesn't know how to walk yet.
Yeah.
So the legs aren't steady and it's like everyone's trying to hold it up, but nobody knows where it's like, it's just nobody knows. There's no answers. So it's uncomfortable for everybody and everybody's scared, like you said. So I went on this show that was pretty new. I think it might have been in the back nine, though, not right in the beginning. And I remember following this director, and this was a heavy hitter director, right? And so, you know, one of the EPs is like, oh, you should hang out on set. Treating me like, but wait, I've been directing for a few years. Like, I don't really, it's very uncomfortable hanging out on another director's set.
Yeah.
That's not my world. That's not where I want to be. Maybe to say hi, but not to, like, watch. Nothing worse for me than having another director sitting behind me. And sometimes they do. It's horrible. Unless they're a shadow and I'm trying to help them get into directing. That's different. So anyway, I said, look, I'm not going to hang out on set with him, but I'll ask him to have coffee with me.
Mm-hmm.
We can go have coffee. Then I can learn about the show, the ins and outs, you know, look for any potholes or anything. So fine. We go out and have coffee. We have a great time. It's all good. Well, one of the people in the art department shows me this like packet. So this guy has gone in there and he's given a packet of like storyboards for like the whole episode. And I mean, this thing is like a textbook, right? And he's given it to all like the keys. And so she gives it to me. She says, here, I shouldn't be giving this to you, but I'm going to show you. This is what he did. So I go home. I sit at my desk.
And now your head's reeling.
Dude, I pull out this packet and I look at it. My first instinct is like, holy shit. I'm never going to be a good director, right? Because I'm not doing this. This is crazy. I mean, he had it down with fucking form. Like, it was done, right? That show was shot and done before he showed up. I swear to God, Mick, within 30 seconds, I put it back in the envelope. I fucking threw it in the trash. And I'm like, fuck that shit. That is never how I am going to be able to do my job.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can have all that. I can have it in my note. I can have it in my book.
Yeah.
Nobody has to see that shit. Nobody needs to. They're busy.
Yeah.
And they don't need to be dictated to. I need them. I just need to be inspired to bring out the storyteller in everybody, right?
Yeah.
And that's what you're talking about. People in a room being like, I want you to fucking shine.
Yeah.
That's what I want.
It's great. I'm telling you, it's great.
It's amazing. So I'm hoping, you know, through these kind of conversations that we can, you know, spread a little bit of that, like, good cheer and all that.
So my whole point of the podcast is to hustle and be passionate, be, you know, understand what works for you and understand what doesn't. But really, you know.
How do you think you've inspired? So do you have some stories of some of your followers and your fans that have that have given you solid, like, hey, this is what I went and did because
of listening to you? Yeah, I mean, you know, I'll just say this, and this is, and I have nothing against people that came or are from normal homes. I guess my two children have been born into a normal home.
Is that weird?
I know their experiences. It's not my story. So like when I go and I speak places and through just a tremendous series of beautiful circumstances, I've spoken in different countries, you know, like, so, but if I'm going to go, whether I'm there, I don't know if motivational is the right word, but you know, like I go in there and I just try to carry a message, you know, of like, of ambition and discipline and hope and advancement.
And empowerement.
Empowerment. And so whenever I go, invariably, if it's students, you know, and they'll say, we want to take you to lunch. And I know how that stuff works. You know, you're going to bring your A students or your best students with you, you know. I understand how that game works.
Right.
But I say, the only way that I, and first off, thank you for inviting me to lunch. It's very nice of you. But the only way that I'll agree to go with you is that if you bring that kid that is disruptive in class, because you know as an adult that that kid is being fucking beaten at home or is in a horrifically brutal environment and has no way to vocalize or to articulate what is happening to them, I go, they must be seated next to me.
Right.
End of story.
That's awesome.
End of story. Because those are my people. And the whole point that I do the podcast and the reason why I have people on from so many different walks of life, from championship fighters to Academy Award winners to NBA championship coaches to Emmy winners to the best hairdressers in LA, whatever it is, people who have committed themselves to excellence. Some have come from wild backgrounds. Some have come from completely normal backgrounds. I do that completely intentionally so that when you see and you listen, that it's all the same person. People are dominated by the same fears, the same anxieties, the same worries, and then they express them differently.
Right.
Some people don't know how. I knew that guy was in pain that was fucking with me and everybody else in the room, and I took the immature, easy road out and pushed back. I know better. I'll own it. But nobody's perfect. But the reason why I say that is your life can be one way one day and then not that way the next, good or bad.
Right.
And so, like, to answer your question of like, some real things have happened to people that have listened to the show, you know, that I feel super proud of. And one guy actually came to the show, this last show that I did in Seattle. He drove like 2.5 hours. He's working for the Innocence Project. And like, I don't want to get into this guy's story, man, but you know, like he overcame some stuff. He overcame some stuff because he could, and he didn't think he could. And one day he couldn't do it. And then the next day he could. It doesn't have to be this loud thing. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be like this huge moment of clarity. One day your life can be one way and then the next day it can be completely different. Mm-hmm. And you may not even know. It is just a collection of different actions from the previous day to the next day. And so I've committed the podcast to just pay back to the people that took time throughout my life that have now allowed the next generation of my family to grow up in a completely different environment.
Right.
And now I'm leading a different life. I've been given a new life that I didn't even think was possible.
Right.
And so I would be a fucking evil person if I didn't do something, some way to give it back. I don't make any money on the podcast.
Right.
I have zero sponsors. I only do free ads for family-owned businesses. It's because I want to show them some love too. I mean, they're out there grinding, trying to make some dough.
Right.
So it's been just, I've been paid. You know what? I make something way more than money on the show. I'm never going to. I mean, it's so funny. Someone said the other day, I had a guest on the show. She was phenomenal, amazing guest, very talented, award-winning guest. And we were talking about doing it as a talk show. And she said, this would be a great talk show. I said, oh my God, it'd be amazing. I have some great ideas. It would be fun.
Yeah.
I go, but here's the deal. The only way that I would take sponsorship, she goes, oh, don't get crazy. I go, this is it. Like say we had Coca-Cola, I'd go, Coca-Cola this week is sponsoring the Pancake Chef in Seattle, a family-owned
right.
business that's been for 57 years.
Right.
I go, I wouldn't do it any other way.
Right.
Then it makes Coke look good.
Right.
They're selling Coke products.
Right.
But show them a little love.
Yeah.
You know, I sidetracked a little bit, but it's just, that's my approach to things, you know?
No, it's about giving.
Absolutely.
But you have a huge heart.
Wow, thank you.
And I think that's what makes for great collaboration and great art is
like
having a big heart. And I love you when you're talking about people. Look, we're all the same. We all have the same needs. We all need to be acknowledged. We all want to do better. If we fuck up, it's hard to say you're sorry. It's hard to own it.
Yep.
But it's great to own it. it's like freeing because then you can move forward.
And it takes a lot of encouragement, I think, for people that have never done that. And I get, and in business, I don't, it's none of my business what somebody does.
Right.
But if, you know, in conversations like this, if someone brings it up, someone emailed me on the show the other day, I say a lot on my show, Being Young Almost Killed Me. That's the thing I say a lot because it's, you know, you forget how fucking hard it is to be young. Right. I don't care if you're rich or poor. It's a hard from about 13 to 24, man. That's a rough time.
13 to 24?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think so. Right around there. You know those teen
my
years,
roughest
man.
Was 27 to 27? 30.
Yeah. Well, I almost died at 27.
That so was me. First year,
yeah. 27. I got sober at 20. When did I get sober? 28.
Yeah. See, that's a rough time. That's what I'm saying. That's like
brutal.
The hardest time.
Yeah.
You're just kind of wandering around lost.
But you can, we remember that, even though we probably don't remember a lot of it. But but you know, it's almost like being pregnant, which I certainly can't speak to, but you almost have to forget that pain so that you can have a second child because it's so like you, there's a revisionist history for teen years. Like when I talk to, see parents telling their teenagers like, do your homework, clean your room. Like you were a fucking lunatic when you were a teenager. Have some compassion for the kid. No. Like I hug my son and my daughter and I go, I know this is rough. I know you don't want to do this shit. Who does? I'll tell you, nobody. Right. Nobody wants to pick shit up off their floor. I should probably swear less to them because I talk, you know, I'm like,
well, why not?
Hey, that's how the real world works.
They hear it outside the house, by the way.
They know I love them. Yeah. So I'm like, you know, you can't be a lunatic and having shit all over your floor. You're going to get bugs. You don't want that. You know, like you have to, you know, instead of just being like, when I was your age, I was perfect. No, that's a fucking lie.
That's what I grew up with.
Ugh, gross.
I grew up with like my sisters had like a different mother than I had. My sisters were 16 and 18 years older than me. So my mother, from the day that she adopted me, she stopped drinking. She never had another drink. And the reason she said is because she knew, first of all, she was 42 years old when she adopted me, which back then was kind of older.
And how old were you when you got adopted?
I was 4 days old.
Oh, okay, little baby.
I was a baby. But what she said
But a wise baby.
But what she said, well, what she said was that she, when she drank, she had to just stay in bed the next day and all she could do was eat popsicles and nothing else. So she knew at 42, she couldn't have a baby and do that.
Yeah.
So she stopped drinking. So as a result, I grew up with a saint. My mother was a saint. So I wasn't until I was much older before little dribs and drabs would start coming out because everyone was afraid to like contradict her or say anything anyway.
Yeah.
Because she was very controlling, right? And so my sisters, little by little, I'd hear, oh, yeah, it was like a revolving door when we grew up with her. The front door was like a revolving door. We never knew who was going to be coming in at night. Really? Because she was divorced. I'm like, really? That's who you grew up with? Like, oh, yeah, how about the plates being thrown, this, that? I'm like, oh, really? That's what, how about when she, when, you know, my father, like, we moved to Florida. She left him because there was another guy in Florida. Really? Because I didn't know any of that stuff. It's like you have to be real in your communication. And sometimes going back to like, you know, people that are afraid to be who they are, people that want to pretend and front that there's something else because, you know, they think that's the way to navigate the world. I think that shit comes back to bite you in the ass one way or the other.
I think.
Or maybe I just like to think that because I try to be the person who's authentic and real in the world because I feel like that's what draws people closer to you. Who wants to be around someone who's perfect?
Well, I think there's a price to pay for being, you know, there's a vulnerability. The price to pay for what you're talking about is vulnerability. And when you're in any work environment, there's givers and there's takers. And you're going to have people that are going to, you know, this like come at you. And it's that's what we're talking about, navigating the politics. And I don't know if we brought this up on the podcast, but we were talking just before we rolled that, and I had never heard this. They said, and again, this could be for any business, but they said it specifically for the entertainment business of like, most people quit not because they're no longer creative or that the opportunities stop, but they stop their own opportunities because of they can no longer deal with the personalities.
Right.
That it's just, it just becomes overwhelming and short-tempered and judgmental and taking things personally. And, you know, I've fallen into that rut periodically. And there's, I think there's an awareness to it that, but it's, I have to understand that that's what's happening and be aware of it and take whatever actions I need to squash that because my role is to not change the game. My role is to, you know, if I have an opportunity where I'm running a show or I'm creating a project, then, you know, like I look at a guy, I look at like Reggie or Gina, who I'm working for now, Nick Santora, you know, really great, showrunners that I worked with that were great leaders, that were, that allowed people to flourish, that were not passive aggressive, and you know that that. I mean, I know I'm missing some people off. If you're listening and I didn't say your name, it's not because I don't think that's just.
No, I'm just throwing questions at you. Yeah. Can't remember everything. We have to pull up IMDb and I go through the whole thing. And it's like, that's I don't even have my iPad right now. Lost without it. I'm like, yeah. But no, and I've had a lot of great experiences too. I mean, I've had some amazing experiences with some very, first of all, people that are very loyal, that will work with me and then bring me back. And you know, there's a comfort level to that, that again, it feels good to be trusted. You know what I mean? Like, I know anyone that creates a series, it's their dream, right? Not too many people in this world get that shot. So if you get that shot,
yeah,
I want to give 1,000% to you because I want to support your dream because I know your ass is on the line. And there's nothing better than feeling like you've trusted me to be a part of that. So let's do that. And sometimes, I guess what the vulnerability to me comes where it breaks my heart over and over and over because people don't know that that's the case. They don't trust. It's like, I really, that's sincere. That's real. I want to help you and I want to be the best. And I want to give you what you want. I want to elevate. I want to give you things. I just, we got to do it.
Yeah.
And the fact that they don't maybe necessarily see that that's where somebody's coming from. It kind of hurts. It's like, wait, I'm an artist too.
Well, I feel like the television director is much like the feature film writer. It's just your opinion is appreciated right up until it's not.
Right.
And then when it's not, there's no more debate. The door just shuts.
Do you see on different shows that you've been on how is it working having a guest? Because people in the outside world don't even understand why there's different directors on a series.
Yeah.
And so is it hard having guest directors come in all the time? Is it better? Does it kick up people's fear? Like,
I don't think it kicks up people's fear. I mean, at the end of the day, it's a confidence issue. And then because, like you said, television is this thing that demands, you know, there's an episode prepping, there's an episode shooting, and then there's an episode that's being cut, and then there's an episode that's being written behind that.
Right.
So the showrunner is working on 5 episodes at any given time. Mm-hmm. So the amount of time they can commit to somebody who's making this episode their own, the visiting director, there's a tiny window, this is going on, we're having a conversation. I think this way, I don't think that way. I think this way, what about this way? No, unfortunately, now is the time I have to make a decision.
Right.
And this is the decision that I'm making. I don't like that decision. You have to grow to like it.
Right.
And so that's the difficult ebb and flow of that experience.
But when people are that busy, don't you look at someone's work, hire them and say, you know what? I've got all this going on. You know, that's your job. Why don't you do your job and let me do my job?
I think the fear, and I'm speaking to this on theory because I haven't run my own show.
Right.
So I can't really give you what I would do.
That you 100%.
But I think the fear, because you used the word fear.
Mm-hmm.
I think the fear is, particularly on newer shows, is that they're trying to create the pattern. They're trying to create the look, the vibe. So the worry is, and whether it's a justified worry or not, everyone always has these experiences that they relate to justify it, that the person went way off and they made it a Fellini film, or they did, you know, that everything, it didn't, they have a very specific way they want to see it. They're trying to create a pattern for something. Like, I know a famous producer said, you know, to a pilot director that I worked with, a director that I worked with went to go meet this producer to possibly shoot the pilot. And the producer said, look, you can't shoot this like a movie. You can't shoot this like a $5 million independent. You have to shoot this in a way that I can shoot this again 200 more times.
Right.
So like it's understanding those, you know, being a visiting director and understanding that this is going to go on again next week while you're on another show. Mm-hmm. And so you're here, but everybody else stays. Mm-hmm. And everyone else has to stay and continue to create this thing. So it's to the thing. And everyone collaborates on a vision until the vision contradicts the thing. About probably the best way that, and you know that. But yeah. Like, I think that's why. And I think the same with once the screenwriter, the feature film writer, because television is considered a writer's medium and film's a director's medium. So
yeah,
they
I don't
say,
agree with that.
Well, but that tends to be the norm. So
well, that's, I think that's a myth. I don't think that. I think that's just what people tell themselves. I don't think that's true. I don't think anything is one person's medium. That's at all.
Okay.
I think film is a group effort. It starts with a great script. Oh, yeah.
But if you and I had a note on a feature, you as the director would supersede my concern in my note.
But that's just, again, that's just a power structure. That's politics, right? So I don't buy into those politics. So I don't buy into them in television or movies. I think it's a collaborative medium. I think they both are.
Yeah.
That's my opinion. I don't, you know, I think that when you have here, this is like ink on paper and this is what, you know,
mm-hmm.
It takes a lot of people to make that 3D and to come to life. So I don't buy into it either way. I don't think writers maybe have been treated fairly in film. I don't think directors are treated fairly in TV. And we can sort of bridge that gap and
come
together and say, yeah, we're all doing this together and it's going to be great. Because I do think overall, I think the end result suffers all around. I don't think there's some great TV. No, a lot of TV is not great. There's some great TV.
Yeah.
The state of movies right now is, for me, not very good at all. And we could go off. This is Academy Award weekend.
Yeah.
I think it's like The Emperor's New Clothes. There's like a lot of movies. They're all good.
Yeah.
They're serviceable.
Yeah.
They're not changing my life. They're not even staying with me for a few days. You know what I mean? Which is unfortunate because I mean, it's an art form and it's movies. And
yeah,
it's
Oh, it's unbelievable.
But, you know, anyway, I guess we sort of went off. But I guess I wanted to ask you, going back to like you write a great script. You're mm-hmm. super happy with this episode. Like you fucking love it.
Yeah.
You've been with it. You fucking like went through the changes. It's yours. Have you had an experience where you gave it to a director? And I want to know when something really, they really missed the mark. And then maybe you saw it in dailies. Maybe you didn't until you saw the episode air or, you know, the producer's cut or whatever. And then when you had something and then you got the dailies or you looked at the producer's cut, the director's cut, and you were like, fuck, that's even better than I imagined. Have you had both experiences or?
You know, it's weird. My experience has always been a positive one with directors.
That's
great. It just has. I mean, it's just, I've worked with two Academy Awards. I mean, it's been insane.
You've had great directors.
Yeah, so Juan Campanella directed my first episode of Law & Order SVU.
He's amazing.
So check this out. So I work on the Black Donnellys as those guys win the Academy Award for Crash. So it's Paul Haggis and Bobby Maresco. So from that gig to Law & Order SVU, and the first director of Law & Order SVU is Juan Campanella, who wins the Academy for Best Foreign Film.
Oh, yeah. No, he's amazing. Yeah,
like, incredible guy.
He did some great episodes of SVU.
Phenomenal.
I know.
Great performances, great moves in the camera. And, you know, just I've worked with some great, and I've worked with, you know, I don't know what the term is in, what do they call it, shooters? Like, they go and they just.
Yeah.
They, you know.
Or journeyman type.
Yeah, just coverage and you're in and you're out and there's not a, but to be honest with you, I didn't feel that was happening. I didn't feel a lack of passion from the directors.
Right.
I felt like
people have different skill sets.
I thought everybody was doing great. I thought everybody loved the actors. I thought they were interested in the moves of the camera. They were passionate about, they were just passionate.
Right.
It was great.
It's awesome that you've had all good experiences.
Yeah. I mean, I've had directors that were, I had a guy that was screaming and I've had a couple people have some meltdowns. And then, you know, and then actors too. And, you know, you can talk about politics and I think that's being a good producer.
Yeah.
Is it's when you put your producer hat on and you have to put out those fires and know when a hug is needed and when of, here's what's happening.
Or somebody needs to go.
Well, you're like, this is totally unfucking acceptable.
Right.
And I'm never coming to your trailer again.
Right.
I'm looking you in the eyes. And if the PA says I'm on my way, you better go home.
Right.
You better go home because I'm not coming back to your trailer again.
Right.
End of story. We're all professionals here. People care. They want to make you look good. We need you on set. I'll be there. I'll see you in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And I'm just,
love that.
You know,
see, you're the guy. You're the guy. See, I want to collaborate with you. Because you're the guy.
Also,
we just talk it out.
But I also come and I will tell him and with a smile, like, you know, I wanted to come here and give you a hug, but I kind of want to fire you.
Yeah.
So let's
straight up.
Yeah. Like, let's make this more, let's start making some hug days.
But you didn't just come in and like, oh, it's okay, hug. And then he gets a call from his agent.
I'm like, no, because she was like, no, they didn't know I was on, you know, like an hour late. I'm like, no, this is not, I go, that's not true.
Oh my God. Well, our time is up. We're done.
What?
We're done. We're done.
Oh my God.
I love
you so much.
I think you're such a great judge. So tell everybody where they can find you. Tell us again the show you're, we can look for all that.
Keep an eye out for Shots Fired. Shots Fired Periscope for everybody watching. That's, you know, I don't have a premiere date for that, but you can go to mickbetancourt.com, MickBetancourt, and that's at mickbetancourt for Twitter, mickbetancourt on Instagram. The Mick Betancourt Show drops every Monday. I just ask, you know, give it a, the motto of the show is half comedy, half drama, all heart. It's just about being passionate about hustling. And I know, March 19th, when is this show going to drop?
Oh, in a couple of days.
Oh, great. So March 19th, I'll be at Radford Hall in Van Nuys, one of my favorite shows to do.
Nice.
8 years running now. Great show, great cause. Tickets are only $5. Incredible lineup.
So what's the one place that people can keep track of you?
I would just go to Twitter, at Mick Betancourt. It's just the best way to get a hold. You can reach out to me, and I reply, or the Mick Betancourt Show at Gmail. Email me. I'll email you back.
Perfect. Yeah, that's the best word to describe you, heart.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
That's perfect. Thank you so much for bringing it today. This is the director's chair. Don't forget to subscribe and download to the director's chair. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Rosemary Directs, and look for my movie Silver Skies, the movie on Facebook. I can't wait for you all to see it. Super exciting. Thank you.
Come on, everybody. People. It's time to live it up.